Okay, good evening, everybody. So let's get started. It is 7:30. Two shilas that came up this week. One came on Erev Shabbos last week, I guess, but after our last year. And it came as follows. Both shilas are from Rabbanim, one from a Rav in Philadelphia and one from a Rav in California. So from the Rav in Philadelphia. Good morning. Question. I have a side hustle in Philadelphia selling mezuzahs and tefillin. This is not the first time he sent a shayla that started with that sentence, but it's a new shayla. And it goes as follows. Over the years, especially because of my relationship with non-Orthodox clergy, I've gotten calls from non-Orthodox people. Usually they get scared off by the price, which I'm okay with, because I'm concerned about selling to a family where it won't get used and might get neglected. I got a request yesterday from a conservative family that they're interested in buying tefillin for their...
Daughter.
I know the family personally. The mom's father was a Shomer Shabbos conservative rabbi. They've been to our home for meals on Shabbos, and I can even see them switching to Orthodoxy and to my shul sometime down the road. Can I sell to them? I think she'll take care of the tefillin, and if she's going to be trying to do the mitzvah, she may as well do it with kosher tefillin. Do you have thoughts on this? Have you seen anyone give a psak on it? So that is shayla number one. Shayla number two, from a Rav in California. There is a baby in the community who is a few months old. He was a preemie and is still not growing well. He refuses formula, and it is very hard to get him to eat. The mother isn't producing much milk, so there's a lady in the community who has enough to share with them. However, the lady who produces extra wants to be able to pump on Shabbos to provide that milk to them. I do think it is pikuach nefesh to a certain degree, but not sure if the baby who needs breast milk can obtain it from a bank or other sources. And then he later did some research and he found that there is such a thing as breast milk banks, where you would pay and you would get breast milk from people who have extra that are willing to sell it. So can they take advantage of the offer of kindness of this other lady in the community, rather than going to a breast milk bank, even though that means that this other lady in the community, who is a from woman, is going to have to be pumping on Shabbos. So that is the shayla. So again, we have tefillin for a bat mitzvah girl, and we have milk on Shabbos for another baby. So everyone, let me just see the zoom votes. I got a two, I got a one. Let's see. Oh, I missed a bunch of them. Right. One. Okay, more ones on Zoom, it looks like. Okay, in person. All those who would prefer to talk about tefillin for a bat mitzvah girl. That looks like an overwhelming majority. Okay, so it looks like we're going to talk about tefillin for a bat mitzvah girl. Even though it's pretty close on the Zoom vote. All right, Ot Chazon L'moed. There will be other opportunities. So let's talk about it. So what would you say? What are the considerations over here? What do we have to look at? The fever in what sense?
Meaning in terms of if you assume that it's improper for a girl to wear tefillin, what's the responsibility of the sofer?
Right. And is it the fever to provide a girl with tefillin knowing that she's going to be doing the aveira of wearing tefillin? Right. We're going to have to figure out what exactly is wrong with a woman wearing tefillin. And if we can figure out what's wrong with it, then we can figure out if this is the fever. Yeah?
There's a chance she may come to the shul saying no to the tefillin, make the shirt to the other way.
Ah, so now you have to think about relative lifnei iver, meaning sometimes you have to give someone the lesser avera so that you're not giving them an opportunity for a greater avera.
So she just get it from someone else.
And she can just get it from someone else. What will she get from someone else? Meaning, what? Right, she'll probably get pasul tefillin.
Is it better to get
pasul tefillin than kosher tefillin? What's she going to do each day when she puts on this tefillin? She's going to say a bracha. Very likely she'll say a bracha levatala if she's going to end up with pasul tefillin. But if she ends up with kosher tefillin, is that a bracha levatala? We may not be enthralled with the idea of women wearing tefillin, and we'll see why. But you're going to call it a bracha levatala? I don't know about that. I don't know that it's a bracha levatala. Whereas if she's making a bracha on pasul tefillin, right, which in all likelihood, I mean, her other options are probably, locally there, I would imagine, are for the most part going to be pasul tefillin. Even plenty of Orthodox people are wearing pasul tefillin every day because they just don't know enough about how to buy tefillin, right? So for sure, you know, you ask your average Orthodox person about his mezuzah. Oh, you have ksav beis Yosef or you know, ksav harim? No idea, right? I mean, people don't know like the most basic things about that stuff.
Father is a conservative rabbi, so maybe the father is someone knowledgeable about tefillin.
The grandfather is a conservative rabbi. Grandfather. And it depends what generation of conservative rabbi, you know, what sorts of assumptions you can make.
Would she be an onus on the Bracha
Batala? Oh, okay. So we got so much to do over here. So, okay, so let's start with this. Let's start. I once wrote a piece, I think my first sefer, I wrote a piece about women wearing tefillin. The reason I wrote the piece about women wearing tefillin, or what prompted my research into the topic, was that you may recall a number of years ago, and I think it was an SAR, a girl who comes from a conservative home, a similar type of story, comes from a conservative home, wanted to wear tefillin, wanted to put on tefillin in school, and the principal allowed it, considering that was her family tradition. That's where, tradition, whatever you call it, that's what her family did. That was the hanhaga of her family. So he allowed it, caused a whole brouhaha, and you know, a lot of people were very upset about it. So I thought it would be a good opportunity to look into it from, you know, leaving aside all the emotion and everything else, like from a halachic perspective, you know, with halachic precision, to look into the issue rather than to you know, get all caught up in whatever everyone's you know, emotional visceral reactions. I did learn an important lesson, just like in Hashkafa, from that, and that is that in today's day and age, whatever decisions a person thinks they're making locally, you know, you have to realize that a lot of times local decisions are not local, meaning they become national and international stories. And you know, what used to be something that could have been done, you know, quietly, whether right or wrong to be done quietly, but even if it's wrong to be done quietly, it wouldn't be as wrong because it wouldn't get everywhere. Whereas nowadays, you always have to be concerned and mindful of the fact that even whatever you decide to do in your own Dalet Amos, your own little school, your own little you know, your own little shul, might become much, much bigger than that. Let's get into the issue. There is a Mishnah Maseches Brachos tells as follows: Nashim avadim ketanim peturim mikriyas shema u'min ha'tefillin. There's no doubt women are pater from tefillin, right? That's a starting point that we could all agree on, right? Because women are pater from all mitzvos haseh, shazman, grama, except for the ones that they're not pater from, right? Which is a very sizable list. And so I think Rav Yosef Engel points out that the exceptions on that list are greater in number than the actual rule. I love to tell the story about how Rabbi Sobolovsky says he once asked his shir, how many mitzvah shazman grama do you think women are actually pater from? And one guy said, 1,000. And Rabbi Sobolovsky said, let's back up a second. There are 613 mitzvos in the Torah. There are 248 mitzvos haseh. Now, how many mitzvos haseh shazman grama? There are like six. There are like six mitzvos haseh shazman grama the women are pater from. But there is no doubt that the mitzvah of tefillin is one of them, right? Mitzvah of tefillin, women are certainly pater from. So, okay, they're pater from tefillin, but you know what else they're certainly pater from? Lulav. You know what else they're certainly pater from? Sukkah. And I would bet your moms and sisters sit in the sukkah from time to time. I would bet they even say a bracha when they sit in the sukkah, or they take a lulav and they even say a bracha when they take a lulav. So what would separate tefillin from these other mitzvos, from other mitzvah shazman grama? Why is it that tefillin, for some reason, we're much more sensitive about, and we don't want women volunteering the mitzvah of tefillin? Because there's a cloth, but if a woman could volunteer a mitzvah that she's pater from, as an eina mitzvah v'yosa, to the point that if she's Ashkenazi, she could even say a bracha on it, meaning it's a kiyuma mitzvah, it's just not the same madrega of a kiyuma mitzvah as a mitzvah v'yosa. So why would that prevent her from volunteering? What is a positive thing, right? So the Gemara in Maseches Erev in Daf Tzadi Vav tells us, Michal bas Kushi, ha'isa menachas tefillin v'lo michu b'chachamim. Then Michal bas Kushi, who's Michal bas Kushi?
Daughter.
The daughter of? Shaul HaMelech. Shaul is called a Kushi. Kushi means anyone who stands out in the crowd. Because in white Europe, a black person would stand out in a crowd, right? So anyone who stands out in a crowd is called Kushi. So Tzipora is called Isha Kushis, right? Why is Tzipora and Isha Kushis? So Chazal say that not because she was black necessarily, but because Ma Kushi, Meshuna Ba'oro, Av Tzipora, Meshuna B'ma'aseha. That just like a Kushi stands out, so by a skin color, Tzipora stood out by the way she behaved by her wonderful midos. So Shaul also stood out in the crowd. How did Shaul stand out in the crowd? He was Mishach Malamayla Mikala Am. He was a head taller than everybody else. He also was exceedingly humble, which is funny, right? His humility stood out, which is, you know, ironic. But Shaul also stood out in the crowd. So Michal Bas Kushi, Michal, the daughter of Shaul, put on tefillin, and the Chamim didn't make a macha'a, the Gemara says. So you see Mefurish in the Gemara that there was a great tzaddikas. They used to put on tefillin, and the Rabbanan didn't have a problem with it. So one might argue that why should we have a problem with it? So, you know, there are two ways to take that, right? So some would say, we haven't heard of a single from woman since the days of the Nevi'im who's put on tefillin, right? Meaning we have no record of any Yerushamayim, woman who was admired as a Yerushamayim, as a Shomer Mitzvos, that put on tefillin since the days of the Nevi'im. So everyone always says, Rashi's daughters. Where does it say that Rashi's daughters put on tefillin? Nowhere. It's a myth. It doesn't exist. You know what Rashi's daughters did? They knew how to read and write Hebrew, which was so unusual for the time in which they lived, because women weren't typically educated. So once you say a woman, so they must be the biggest feminists in the world, right? So they probably put on tefillin, and they were also the Kohen Gadol, and they did the Avodah Yom Kippur. None of that. No, they were just they knew how to read and write Hebrew, and they were extremely intelligent. I have no doubt, and educated. But we have no basis for any such claim that Rashi's daughters put on tefillin. So since the times of the Nevi'im, but one might argue, well, Michal did it, and the Gemara says lo michu ba chachamim. The chacham didn't have a problem with it. So there is a slight girsa change in the Yerushalmi. Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi that the Yerushalmi in Brachos says Michal bas Kushi michu biyadeha chachamim. You just change one word, you know, just take out the word lo, that the chachamim did have a problem with it. In the Sefer Charedim, he writes that whenever it says lo michu ba chachamim, isura ika, meaning it's a sign that she did something wrong. It's just that chachamim have to pick their battles. That sometimes chachamim make a big stink out of things, and sometimes chachamim don't make a big stink out of things. So the chachamim had to decide lo michu ba chachamim, but not because it was mutter. So even according to the girsa of the Bavli, the Sefer Charedim says, it means that it was problematic, that it wasn't right for Michal to be wearing tefillin.
That wouldn't apply in this case. The sofer shouldn't protest, same way that Chacham didn't protest.
The sofer shouldn't protest, okay. But should he be providing tefillin?
He shouldn't be.
I mean, we're not even at that stage yet. We're just trying to figure out what's so bad about women wearing tefillin. Yeah?
Doesn't the fact that the Gemara brings this up imply there's some problem that we mentioned?
There's some problem.
To say that the Chacham didn't protest implies you would have thought that they wouldn't.
Right. So that's what the Sefer Charedim says. That whenever it says Lo Michu B'Chachamim, that implies that there's something to be mocha about, and they just, you know, they chose their battles, which every rabbi does, right? Meaning, every rabbi can make a federal case about every minor violation that they see, but then they won't have a job for much longer, and they're not going to make an impact, and they're not going to be able to do things. So you have to obviously choose your battles wisely and figure out what's worth a macha'a and what's not worth a macha'a. But what are the reasons? Why is it that a woman should not be wearing tefillin? It seems to be that it's universally accepted Orthodox Jewish practice that women do not wear tefillin. So the question is, why not? So in my first sefer, I collected 9 potential reasons why Orthodox practice is that women don't wear tefillin. I don't think we're going to go through all 9 right now, but we'll go through some of them. The first and most notable one is the Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos Nachlem Tas that tefillin tzrichin guf naki ke'elisha bal knafayim, that in order for a person to wear tefillin, they need to be able to maintain a guf naki, like Elisha Bal Knafayim, who was known to have taken extraordinary care of his tefillin. The Yerushalmi says that anyone who's not ke Elisha Bal Knafayim should not wear tefillin. Tosfos Maseches Erevin writes, that's why women don't wear tefillin. Tosfos on that Michal Gemara says, that's why women don't wear tefillin, and that's why the Chachamim made a macha'a, according to the Yerushalmi. Tosfos writes, V'nir lefarish, d'taym leman d'yamar d'lavi rishos mishum d'tefillin, tzrichim guvnaki, v'nashim ein zrizos lizaher. And women simply cannot be careful, or are not likely to be careful, about guvnaki. Beis Yosef quotes the same thing in the name of the Kolbo, that if a woman says, I would like to wear tefillin, ein shomin lahen. Mepnei she'enan yodos lishmar atzman b'nekius. We do not listen to them because they do not know how to maintain a sense of nekius. And therefore it appears in Shulchan Aruch, Nashim avadim p'turim mitfilin, neshim mitzvei shazman grama. And the Rama adds, v'im hanashim rotzos lachmir latzman mochin biyadam. If women decide they want to be machmir and put on tefillin, we make a macha'a, says the Rama. We make a macha, even though our gears in the Gemara says lo micha bacham, the Rama says we do make a macha, and the Gra explains it's because of a guf naki. Now we also aren't so great at guf naki, and we've made a concession because of that, right? The Achronim, the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch already point out that we've made a major concession in the mitzvah of tefillin because of our inability, men's inability to keep a guf naki. And what's that major concession? We only put it on for davening, right? The mitzvah of tefillin is kalayom. The mitzvah of tefillin is all day long, and we don't wear it all day long because we're not confident we'll be able to keep a guf naki all day long. But for the amount of time that it takes to daven, how long is shachris already? You know, depending on where you daven, it's a shachris, a weekday shachris meeting is anywhere between 18 minutes and an hour and 15, right? And if you come a little bit late, leave a little bit early, you know, you can whittle it down to 12, right? So it's not that hard to keep a guf naki for the amount of time that it takes to daven shachris. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains, why don't we just stop wearing tefillin because we can't keep a guf naki? Meaning we're saying women shouldn't wear tefillin because they can't keep a guf naki. So Aruch HaShulchan explains, because we don't have a choice. Meaning we're mechuyev in the mitzvah, so we have to do it. So we knock it down to the bare minimum. Whereas women are not mechuyev in the mitzvah, so they don't have to do it. It's an unacceptable risk for a woman to take, whereas for a man, it's not. We have no option but to take somewhat of a risk. But we do limit the amount of time we put on tefillin. That's what Rav Shechter writes in Mipnine Arav, that umehai taima ein onu manichin lo lenashim v'lo la'avadim v'lo l'ktanim l'niach tefillin klal. That our minhag is we're mitzamtzim tefillin, we put it on for as short a time as possible. They say that in Valashin, Rav Shechter told me that in Valashin, there was one person that anyone wanted to put on tefillin all day, the Netziv would not allow it, except for one person he allowed to wear tefillin all day, and that was Rav Kook. Because he was an Ish Kadosh Kemal Hashem Tzvakos, and it was obvious to everybody that was the case. So he was allowed to, but he had special permission. No one else was allowed.
What's this for men in Yerushalayim to wear it all day?
So this is like a big. Anyone who goes to Nativ comes back, I asked him Nevitzal. He told me I should wear tefillin, at least at Mincha. Nevitzal is just wear Mincha. I think whenever Eisenstein comes to visit, he puts on a Mincha, because it's Talmud of Nevitzal. To put on a milchah is a much better argument than to put on all day. I guess the basis of those who put on all day is the assumption that they are able to keep a guf naki, that they are kedoshim or whatever. That's really technically the mitzvah. It's a good question why we don't put on a milchah, because milchah is also very short. We should be able to keep a guf naki for milchah. So that's a good kasha. I once had a Talmud came back from Nativ, from 3 years in Nativ, and he came back and he asked his mom to buy him, he asked his parents to buy him another pair of tefillin. For mincha, he figured a smaller pair would be easier, would stick out less, so he asked for another pair of tefillin. So that's what he wanted for his birthday or something. And his mom said, I never heard of something so crazy in my life. I never heard of anyone who gets a second pair of tefillin for mincha. But she didn't know who to ask, so she went on YU Torah onto one of her Shechter's shirim, anyone, just picked a random one, and you know there's like ask the speaker, so she clicked on that and she sent an email through that, you know, a message from Shechter. My crazy son just came back from yeshiva and he wants to return. So the next day she got a response, you know, written tshuva from Rav Shechter about it, and the kid was so excited, you know, even though like Rav Shechter said he should not be wearing, you know, that he should not do this. Rav Shechter said, you know, there's a concept in halacha called mechzi ki yuhara. He said, this isn't mechzi ki yuhara, this is yuhara mamish. You know, and he told that story about Rav Cook in Valashin. But anyway, there is a sefer called Tehillah LeDavid. In Siman Lamed Ches, the Tehillah LeDavid writes, he says, I don't understand. I have a big tzarachim on this whole idea that women don't wear tefillin because they can't keep a gufnaki. Because says the Tehillah LeDavid, do you know what else needs a gufnaki? Tefillah. Tefillah needs a gufnaki. So how's it possible that we allow women to daven, and women daven all the time, and while they're davening, you know, they're going to be keeping a gufnaki by definition because they need to for tefillah. So why not just wear tefillin while they're davening? And he says, yesh la'ayin, whether we still need to be mocha. He says, I understand what the Ramah was talking about. The Ramah was saying, if you're going to wear tefillin all day, and a woman wants to do the same, so then we should make a macha'a. But maybe if a woman just wants to wear it for davening, maybe it's not worth making a macha'a, because she needs a gufnaki anyway for tefillah, rather. So Rav Aaron Feldman, Rosh Yeshiva Neir Yisrael, has a book called Eye of the Storm. Anyone ever seen it? It's like a little English book where I think the subtitle is like whatever you call it, the line above the big line, right? It says Eye of the Storm, a calm take on raging issues or something like that. So, okay, definition of calm take, you know, we could debate, but it's certainly on raging issues. And in that, I guess for Avaron it's pretty calm. But in that in that sefer, he says that that even the Tehillah LeDavid never suggested to change our minhag. He just leaves it as a tzarachiyun, that why it is that when it comes to tefillah, we're not worried about women's inability to keep a gufnaki, and when it comes to tefillin, we are. And he says, and as far as the kash is concerned, I think I have a good answer, he says. What happens if you don't keep a gufnaki during tefillah? You know what? Your tefillah is still a tefillah. What happens if you don't keep a gufnaki while wearing tefillin? You're mechalil the tefillin. It's a chilul of the tefillin to not keep a gufnaki. So it's a much higher stakes game when it comes to lack of gufnaki, when it comes to tefillin. That's what Rabbi Feldman suggests. So that's the primary reason, I think, that the Ramah says that we do make an objection if women want to wear tefillin. There is a Shilta Giborim in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that says a curious phrase. He says, not so curious, probably referring to Karaites, he says that it's Shanira Kederach HaChitzonim Sha'ovrim al divrei chachamim beinim rotzim lidrash hamakros kamosan, that when a woman wears tefillin, it's like she's not accepting the concept, the mitzvah shazman grama, the women are patrim, she's not accepting the divrei chazal, and therefore it's near kederech hachitzonim. Now obviously he's referring to Karaites, he's not referring to conservative and reform Jews, but you know, one could argue that it's at least shenira kederech hareformim, as Rav Moshe likes to say. Rav Moshe has such a phrase that there are certain things that you do that, yeah, as soon as you see a person doing that, like you say, oh, that's obviously not orthodox, right? No one sees, whatever, the women of the wall or whatever, with the tefillin down here, b'nei chamamish, and the scarf talis and whatever, and says, oh, that must be a big Yerushimayim. She's probably a Rebbetzin from Bnei Brak, right? No one, you understand that that's an immediate affiliation with other streams of Judaism. And one should try to avoid being associated with streams of Judaism that don't believe in, I don't know, Torah Min HaShemayim, and, you know, like other things like that. So that's probably worthwhile avoiding. I'm going to get hate mail for that, because there's one guy that every time I say anything about conservative Judaism, he sends me angry emails. How could you say that? Why would you be so divisive? You have a platform as a rep. We believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. I'm not embarrassed. We believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. We think it's wrong not to believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. Nothing wrong with saying that. Okay. We love all Jews. They're our brothers, they're our sisters. We love every Jew. We don't love every form of the way Judaism is represented and practiced. Sometimes we think it's a ziyuf haTorah, and is really terrible. Okay, but don't you know Orthodox people that don't have good midos? Yes, but I don't know of any Orthodox people that think it's a maila not to have good midos. I think everyone has failings. Okay, I just saved myself a whole email exchange. totally turned the person off. He's never going to know. Okay, so a third reason that women don't wear tefillin is brought by Rav Yosef Engel in the name of the Maharal, where he writes that since it says in tefillin ki shem Hashem nikra alecha, ein roi shiye notel Hashem lios nikra alav v'meinu mechuyiv b'davar. V'al zeh ne'emar lo sisa shem Hashem elokecha l'shav. That it's like lo sisa shem Hashem elokecha l'shav. Because if you're not mechuyiv b'davar, you shouldn't have something that brings the shem Hashem alecha. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but that's what he suggests. That once it's optional for you, you could do optional mitzvos, but you can't do optional taking shem Hashem alecha. Taking shem Hashem alecha is a much higher stakes kind of situation. Then there's a very unusual comment of the Tshuva Shavos Yaakov, where he says, an avil biyom rishon doesn't wear tefillin, because at a time of avelus, when one is in mourning and when one is in sadness, it's inappropriate to have the pe'er of tefillin. So, well, we know about nashim, that nashim dim asan metzuya, that they're more emotional and they cry more easily, so they always have a din of an avil biyom rishon. It seems like a little bit of a stretch, a little bit hard to accept. Probably the most famous reason is that it's a violation of Liyah Kli Gevra Al Isha. The Targum Yonasan Ben Azil says on the Pasuk, Liyah Kli Gevra Al Isha, Liyah Gulyan De Tzitzis with Tfilin De Inun Tikkuni Gever Al Itza. Targum Yonasan Ben Azil actually says Tzitzis and Tfilin in Liyah Kli Gevra Al Isha. Rav Maisha has a famous tshuva in Arachayim Chazal Sim Memtes about a woman wearing tzitzis. Right, a woman wanted to know, can she wear tzitzis? Ein mitzvah v'yosa, right? Can she volunteer the mitzvah? So Ramesha said that there are two hesitations. Hesitation number one is that you're not doing it because you want to volunteer the mitzvah. You're doing it because you subscribe to this thing called feminism, which is not a Jewish value. Sometimes people ask the question, what does Judaism think about feminism? Judaism doesn't think anything about feminism. Feminism is not a concept in Judaism. Judaism has a lot of concepts. We have concepts of tzniyus, of kavod abrios, of, there are a lot of concepts that appear in Shas. Feminism isn't one of them. We believe in Avodah Hashem. Sometimes that leads you to things that you might say are feminist, and sometimes that leads you to things that you might say are anti-feminist. We don't care, because feminism is just not a value in Judaism. It's not a thing in Judaism. So Rav Moshe says there are two possible hesitations. One is that you're signing on to this other religion called feminism, and the other is that that you're wearing klei gever, that it's, you're wearing a men's garment. So Moshe says, as far as the men's garment, that's easy to solve. How do you solve it? Wear a women's garment, meaning make a four-cornered garment that's clearly feminine in nature. Okay, that's easy. What about the fact that, we want to make sure that you're doing this l'shem shemayim, and that this isn't just because, you're subscribing to feminism? So Rav Moshe says, don't tell anybody. If nobody on planet Earth knows that you're doing this other than you, then I'm pretty confident that you're not doing it to make a point and to set an agenda. So you want to wear a pink baguette that has dal kanfus and has tzitzis, and just don't tell anybody. I once said this in a shir. A guy emailed me, and he told me that he once dated someone, and on the fourth date or something, I guess that's when her posik told her she has to reveal this, she told him, by the way, I wear tzitzis. So the guy said in the email, I didn't marry her. I said, did anybody? If she's following her emotion, I guess she felt that the husband would need to know about that. All right. There are other reasons as well. But what you see from all of this is that if a woman puts on tefillin, is she doing the mitzvah? Probably yes. Meaning it could be she's not supposed to be doing that mitzvah. I mean, it's true that she's not supposed to be doing that mitzvah, but she is doing the mitzvah. When she says the bracha, it's a bracha. And if she were to say a bracha on, certainly if she were to say a bracha on pasul tefillin, it would be a bracha levatala. So that's one point to take into account. that if you don't give her this tefillin, if you don't sell her kasher tefillin, someone else is going to sell her pasul tefillin, she'll be saying two brachos avatal every day. It's not lifnei iver, it's not your fault that she's saying two brachos avatal every day, so it's not, but it's just to keep in mind, like, that's what's ultimately going to be. And if there's a particular relationship over here that's really important to potentially bring this family closer to Torah mitzvahs, to more religious observance and to more, more authentic religious observance, and that relationship is going to be severed by you saying, I'm sorry, I don't sell tefillin to people who are going to, allow a girl to wear tefillin. So that could be a bigger lifnei iver, Rav Shlomo Zalman's relative lifnei iver, that you're not allowed to give someone a drink of water if they're not going to say a bracha. But if it's going to be a big chil Hashem that you're not giving a drink of water because there are movers that you hired and it's 900 degrees outside and they're sweating buckets and they're going to hate from people, so it's a bigger lifnei iver to cause people to hate from people than to not, so you have to keep in mind the relative lifnei iver. I happen to have asked Rav Yisrael Reisman from Tor V'Das, the Shad. I did not ask for Shechter. I didn't see him this week, I was away, but I emailed Rabbi Reisman, and Rav Reisman said that as follows. Rav Pam related that at a Torah Masorah convention many years ago, Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov, and Rav Ruderman were asked to give guidance on catering to those who are doing Shalok HaLacha anyway. For example, in communities where intermarriage is rampant, should Jewish organizations have mixed dancing affairs so that those who do it anyway would at least stay in the fold? They said not to. From this came their psak not to invite people on Shabbos if they must drive to get to the location. I know that Kiruv organizations go with a different psak, which is the psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the psak of Rav Soloveitchik, etc. My understanding is that compromises are a slippery slope. I guess this application of the rule can be debated, meaning, why is this not the same? Because he explains, women wearing tefillin is not quite Chil Shabbos, nor mixed dancing. Still, the overriding hashkafa of their psak seems appropriate, so he seems to be leaning toward don't sell the tefillin. And then he writes, having said that, if refusing to sell tefillin will create animosity, he should sell them. Meaning, then coming back with that consideration that you have to keep the relationship, you have to take that into account and be aware of the particular situation. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos and good evening.